Good evening to you. We do have kind of an abbreviated service tonight, kind of a speed church, if you will. We're going to have our fellowship at Lions Park here in just a little while. So I had intended for this to be a really short lesson, but there was just more and more to say. And so I'm not sure how abbreviated it really is going to be, but I think it'll be a little more abbreviated than what I usually do. So anyway, we'll find out about that. We're going to be kind of continuing the theme that Drew had talked about this morning in John chapter 6. And Garrett read the comparative passage in one of the other gospels for us in Matthew about the feeding of the 5,000. And so that is a great account that we're going to take a look at. John's account is a little bit different. His account has a few differences. We're going to take a look at that and see if you notice some of those. So why don't you read along with me as we take a look at John chapter 6, verses 1 through 15. After this, Jesus went away to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias, and a large crowd was following him because they saw the signs that he was doing on the sick. Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat down with his disciples. Now the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was at hand. And lifting up his eyes then, and seeing that a large crowd was coming toward him, Jesus said to Philip, "Where are we to buy bread so that these people may eat?" And he said this to test him, for he himself knew what he would do. And Philip answered him, 200 denarii would not buy enough bread for each of them to have a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are they for so many?" And Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down, about 5,000 in number. Jesus then took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated. So also the fish, as much as they wanted. And when they had eaten their fill, he told his disciples, "Gather up the leftover fragments that nothing may be lost." So they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets with fragments from the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten. And when the people saw the sign that he had done, they said, "This is indeed the prophet who is to come into the world." Perceiving then that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, Jesus withdrew again to the mountain by himself. The miracle of the feeding of the 5,000 is the only miracle that is recorded in all 4 of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But in John's account, just a little bit of extra detail where the others don't provide. And if you caught it, there are a couple of things. And only John describes the involvement of 2 specific disciples, Philip and Andrew. And it's Jesus who questions Philip, and then Andrew is the one who brings the boy to Jesus with the 5 barley loaves and the 2 fish. So in John chapter 6 and verse 2, it indicates that the crowds came seeking Jesus because of the signs he performed in the healing of the sick. However, Jesus is seeking a retreat to the mountainside. And as Drew referred to this morning, Jesus did this more than once. He would often go and seek time to pray, seek time to be with his disciples. So looking at the 3 other gospel accounts, there's basically 3 reasons. When we look at Matthew, Mark, and Luke, 3 reasons Jesus really retreated to this mountainside. And the first reason we see is in Matthew chapter 14, verses 12 and 13. He needed time to mourn for John the Baptist. The second one we see in Mark chapter 6 and verse 31, he wanted to provide some rest for himself and his disciples. And the third reason we see is in Luke chapter 9 and verse 9, he wanted to avoid Herod. So these 3 reasons provided by the other 3 gospels tell us you know, really the reason Jesus is seeking solace, the time he wants to be with his disciples, just to retreat, just to get away. So once again, Jesus sees that the crowds of people are approaching, and he has compassion on them. Jesus is always showing that love, always showing that compassion. And we see that once again here. The number recorded in the gospel accounts is 5,000 men. And as you may have studied before, this does not include women and children. There are some scholars that think that this number would be doubled, with the women and children to be about 10,000 people. And while that may be so, it may not be quite that much. But we do know that it was significantly more than 5,000 people. Don't know how much, but it was definitely more than that. And so all the miracles that we come across, that we find in the gospel accounts, all those miracles that Jesus performed, all of those are important. And it captures the attention of each gospel writer, this specific one, Jesus feeding the 5,000. And my thoughts are, you know, if this captures the attention of the four gospel writers, it really probably ought to capture my attention as well. And so I want to take a look at this just briefly here this evening. What are some things regarding this amazing miracle that I need to notice? So there's three things here that I would like to point out is something that needs to be noticed. And the first one is simply this. It's a youth who rescues the day that we see in John chapter 6 and verse 9. You know, Philip is asked by Jesus, where are we to buy bread for all of these people to eat? And Philip immediately starts calculating things in his head, saying basically 200 denarii would not be enough to feed all of these people, wouldn't even be close to feed all of these people. Now, if you consider that a denarii would be a day's wage, basically, he's saying that 200 days' wages would not be enough to feed this great amount of people. It wouldn't even be close. In the other gospel accounts, Jesus is approached by the disciples who encourage him to send all of these people away so they can go to the nearby towns and buy some food and get food for themselves. And Jesus responds to them in the other gospel accounts, "You find them something to eat." He throws it back on them and says, "You give them something to eat." And so the reality here is a youth and not an adult who comes to the rescue here. Now I ask you, is that not interesting to you? What a beautiful message that sends to our young people. What a beautiful message that sends to our children, that you are important to God. You know, our youth are a vital part of the church today, right here, right now. I thought that in 1988 when I first entered youth ministry. I still think that right now, because youth have a place in the church. Young people, realize that you have an important role to fulfill in the church. Be involved. Use your talents. Okay, those things are important. Make a difference for the Lord. And remember, children and teens, you have a job to do for Jesus. And this immediately brings me to think about the importance of youth in the Old Testament. You know, the greatest youth in the Old Testament by many scholars is considered to be Joseph. Joseph, if he is the greatest youth in the Old Testament, what do we know about Joseph? We know that he was responsible. His dad tells him to go find his brothers. He goes to look for his brothers, and he looks until he finds them. He just doesn't look for a little while and look behind a few trees or whatever and go back. Oh, I couldn't find them. I looked everywhere. He's responsible. He goes and he fulfills the job. He's honest. He's trustworthy. Whatever Potiphar tells him to do, he does. Whatever the captain of the guard in prison tells him to do, he does. And he can be trusted to the point that they can tell him to do it, and they'll even leave him alone. Why was Joseph the greatest youth in the Old Testament? Because of his responsibility, because of his willingness to work hard, because of his willingness to do and to honor and respect authority. And even more than that, I think about Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You know, some scholars, or most scholars, probably think that Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, when they were taken into captivity from Judah and taken to Babylon, that they were somewhere between 10 to 15 years old. That is pretty young. To be taken hundreds of miles away from your homeland, maybe even away from your families and your parents. What do we know about Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the book of Daniel? We do know that from the very first encounter, they were representing God. They were honoring God in the way that they talked, in the way that they acted, in the way that they were really willing to stand up. And so from Daniel chapter 1 all the way to Daniel chapter 6, basically in every chapter, we see Daniel and his three friends, or his three friends, or just Daniel, making a difference for God. Basically, they are standing up in the midst of a godless government, a government who doesn't honor God, who doesn't believe in God, and we see what they are doing. In the Old Testament, we have young people standing up for God and making a difference, using their talents, not afraid to do what is right, regardless of what other people think, regardless of the enormous amounts of pressure. Even when they were the only ones willing to do what was right, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were doing what was right. That brings me to this passage of scripture in 1 Timothy 4:12. Always been one of my favorites since I've been involved in youth ministry. This is from the New Century Version. I just like the way it read. It says, "Do not let anyone treat you as if you are unimportant because you are young. Instead, be an example to the believers with your words, your actions, your love, your faith, and your pure life." You know, the New Testament shows us how important youth are to Jesus, because they can do great things for the body of Christ. So I notice that it's a youth and not an adult who rescues the day. But I also notice this point, that Andrew, the disciple of Jesus, the apostle of Jesus, can really bring it. And I like that. We see that in John chapter 6, verse 8. It's interesting to note here that Andrew is referred to only five times in the book of John. In the Gospel of John, we see Andrew mentioned five times in chapter 1 and verse 40, chapter 1, verse 44, chapter 6, verse 8, and he's mentioned twice in chapter 12, verse 22. And in nearly every instance that he's mentioned in the Gospel of John, he's mentioned as bringing someone to Jesus. Isn't that amazing? Nearly every instance that he's mentioned by one of his fellow disciples in his writings, he's always bringing someone to Jesus. He brought his brother Peter. He brought the boy in 6:8. He was bringing Greeks to Jesus in 12 and 22. This man just brings it. You know, he's like the friend that everyone wants to have. Everybody wants to be around someone who's positive, someone who is optimistic. This is Andrew. He's the one that you want to be around. He's the one that you want near your side, because he's the one who will encourage you. How are we to buy food for this multitude so that they can be satisfied? What's Philip's answer? Philip says, it's not possible. He starts calculating the cost. He says, it's not possible. We can't do it. What's Andrew's response? He's bringing the little boy to Jesus in hopes that Jesus can do something. Philip says, I don't think it's possible, Jesus. You're asking me what I think. I'm telling you, I just don't think it's possible. Andrew's like, if I can just get this little boy to Jesus, I think Jesus can do something. Do you see the difference, this difference in the attitude? Philip producing the figures, Andrew producing the food in hopes that Jesus can do something. Well, Andrew's like the perfect salesman who's going to, he's going to make you feel good about your investments, okay? There's going to be some salesman you walk away and you think, oh, that dude just cheated the fire out of me. But Andrew is the one that's just encouraging you, thinking, oh, you made the right decision here. And I'll tell you why. And he explains it to you. What a neat thing that really is. How someone convinced a hungry boy with the only food in a stadium crowd to give up his lunch is beyond me. Think about that. Have you ever tried to convince a young boy to give up their lunch? I don't see it happening, to be honest with you. That'd be the most difficult thing. I had a friend in elementary school. His name was Ben Condon. Now, Ben was kind of a big boy. And trust me, he enjoyed his lunch, okay? His dad owned a hardware store, and he was an only child. And so he was well off. And his mom really treated him right for lunch. I mean, he got the good stuff. He got every day in his lunch, he got Lay's potato chips. I mean, the name brand, okay? Sour cream and onion. Ooh, yeah. Okay, so he got the Hostess ding-dongs. Not talking Little Debbie, not some Dolly Madison type thing, not some sure, fine, cheap cookie, you know? He gets the good stuff. And every boy in his class was trying to trade him something for his lunch, maybe for a Hostess ding-dong or cupcake or something like that, Hostess Twinkie or, you know, his chips or anything like that. You think Ben's going to give that up? Not happening. Try to convince a young boy to give up his lunch. That's why I think Andrew is a really great salesman, making you feel good about the investments that you decide to make. It's because here is Andrew convincing a little boy, hey, just come to me with Jesus. You got to meet Jesus. You know what? You got this lunch here. You know, if you just think about sharing, something good is going to happen. You're never going to forget it. Okay? And so here is Andrew really showing us something. You know what he's showing us? Andrew shows us that so many problems are solved by bringing them to Jesus. You know, solving those problems by bringing them to Jesus, really, it's just as simple as that. How many problems in your life could be managed if you just brought them to Jesus? How many souls could be saved if we just brought others to the church with us to hear the gospel message being preached? Interesting when you think about it. You know, I like this song right here. It's an old song, Bring Them In. Okay? Bring them in. Hark, the shepherd's voice I hear out in the desert, dark and drear, calling the sheep who've gone astray, far from the shepherd's fold away. Bring them in. Bring them in. Bring them in from the fields of sin. Bring those wandering ones to Jesus. What a beautiful song that is, an old song, but a really good song about basically what Andrew was doing. He was basically bringing someone to Jesus all throughout the Gospel of John. Amazing thing that is. Well, notice that a youth rescues a day. We notice that Andrew, he's a dude who can really bring it. And then we can notice this last thing, and that the boy gave it all. We see that in chapter 6 and verse 9. Five barley loaves, 2 fish. Now keep in mind, as you saw in the initial picture, these barley loaves were probably more shaped like a pancake, not like a big piece of French bread or something like that, you know. A flatter, rounder, pancake-type bread, barley loaf that he had. This fish that he had was probably going to be used as a kind of a relish for the bread or something like that. So this is the thinking here. And certainly these 5 barley loaves, the 2 small fish, they're not going to go very far amongst this huge, huge crowd. It'd be ridiculous for anybody to think that it would. However, consider this. Even the little that mankind can offer is enough if it's given to God. Even the little that you think that you have, if you give it to God with the right spirit, it's going to be enough. I think that, you know, you may not be well off financially, but you can still give what you have to God. And if you give it to him in the right spirit, it's going to be enough because he's going to take care of that. You may not be the most talented, but if you'll offer your best to God, it's going to be enough. Offer what you have to God, and he will take care of it. I believe that he'll multiply it. I believe that he'll compound it. If you will be willing to give to God. You know, if we would be like children in a lot of ways. Children are good sharers. When they're taught to share, they really want to share. And they really will step up and share. All you got to do is step back and watch and encourage and see that in action. I like the commercial that's out right now for Hershey's Chocolate. Have you seen that one? Where they have two little girls, and in front of them is a plate of Hershey's Chocolate, you know, the candy bar, and the little rectangle pieces is broken up into those rectangle pieces and all scattered across this plate. And the two girls are sitting there together, and this chocolate is in front of them. And a voice comes on. This guy says, take a piece of chocolate if you're the tallest. So they both take a piece of chocolate and they eat it. And then he says, take a piece of chocolate if you're the best at eating your vegetables. They both take a piece of chocolate and they throw it down. And then he says, if you're the best at sharing, take a piece of chocolate. And then they hesitate. And then one of the girls takes a piece of the chocolate and gives it to the other little girl. I mean, that's what children do. And how much can we learn from little children? Tons. There are tons that we can learn from children. Give of what you have, and God will compound it and multiply it beyond imagination. I want to share this passage of scripture in Mark chapter 12. Of course, it's about a poor widow, a widow who has nothing. And this is really about the widow giving those two mites. So let's read this together. And he sat down opposite the treasury and watched the people putting money into the offering box. Many rich people put in large sums, and a poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which make a penny. And he called his disciples to him and said to them, truly, I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all of those who are contributing to the offering box, for they all contributed out of their abundance. But she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had, all she had to live on. What a beautiful picture. And Jesus is really teaching an object lesson right here. They can hear this money clinking as it's being thrown into the box. And the more sound it makes, the more that someone is given. And someone says, oh, that person's given a lot. And a little bit, oh, that person's given a little. And so no one paying much attention to what this widow is giving, less than a penny. And Jesus says, she gave from the heart. This person gave from all they had. And God is going to compound it, multiply it beyond anyone's imagination. What a beautiful lesson. Question is, what are you willing to give to Jesus? Your time, your talents, your heart, your money? The young boy gave it all. The widow gave all she had to live on. What do you have to give? You know, I like this song too. Here's another old song. None of self and all of thee. It's about an encounter with Jesus. Here's a person that's really all about themselves until they meet Jesus. Person just living life the way they want to live. All of self, none of thee. Then they encounter Jesus. And things start to change in their life. Well, it's a slow progress. But some of self. Okay? I mean, it's more of self and some of thee. Okay? More of self. And then day by day, things start to change. and it's less of self and more of thee. And then as they grow, they mature, then it changes again until it's none of self in all of thee. This is the song that I want to live, but I want to be living in the fourth verse. I want to be living in the fourth verse because that's the one that's the spirit of Jesus Christ and the life that has been affected. Well, what did you learn? Jesus feeding the 5,000, it really is an amazing miracle. It's easy to see why the gospel writers all chose to include it. You see, the focus here is really on the Lord. It's not on the lad, even though we sometimes focus it on the boy. The focus here is really on Jesus and that a message that we need to realize the importance of youth and what youth mean to Jesus, and we really should encourage them to serve. We need to bring it. We need to bring God our best. And then, of course, last, we need to be the giver that God has called us to be. If we just give of what we have, it'll be enough, and God will take care of it. Do you need to give tonight? Do you need to give of yourself? Do you need to change your life in some way? If we can help you, please come now.